that, isn't it? And then get up and speak, or I find it hard. I spoke to Michelle Hawthorne when she was here last week, and I think that's a really good thing to get behind. I'm not here this Saturday, but if you're here and around and you want to know more, then I'd go to it. It's going to make a difference, isn't it? Sometimes it's just to be informed, isn't it? We don't always know what's going on. But if we know, then we can't probably just sit by, can we? Very difficult to. Well, you seem like you've already met with God today. I don't think you really need me now. I feel like God's already on the move. But anyway, let's trust that he wants to say something through me. We're on a series on David and the Psalms at the moment. And I think your homework, well, some of you, was to read 1 Samuel 21, 22. So I hope some of you have done that, because I'm not going to go over it all. I'm really speaking out of Psalm 57. So if you keep your finger in there as well, that was the psalm that David wrote out of the cave. Okay. David, we know, was a worshipper. I loved walking in today and just feeling the worship, feeling the presence of God. Worship and justice, they go together. And he was a man after God's own heart, David. He interacted with God, whatever was going on. He showed genuine loyalty and real weakness as well. I like that he did both of that. In the cave, David spent quite a lot of time in caves. Did you have a hiding place as a child? Did you have a safe place to go? Did you go and hide in a cave? Caves are a bit dirty, actually, and a bit messy. Sometimes drawings on the wall, isn't there, in caves? But maybe some of you used to go into a cave. I don't know. You have to think, in this situation, actually, David's fleeing from Saul. He's feigning madness. It's not a grand situation for David all round, really. And let me just tell you, I'm just going to read you a little bit out of 1 Samuel 22, verse 1 to 5. Need my glasses. This is where he is, just in the cave. Okay, David at Adullam and Mizpah. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered round him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him. From there, David went to Mizpah in Moab and said to the king of Moab, "Would you let my father and mother come and stay with you until I learn what God will do for me?" So he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him as long as David was in the stronghold. But the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Go into the land of Judah." So David left and went to the forest of Hereth. David's on the run. What do you do when it gets tough in your life? Do you start fighting? Do you run? Do you flee the situation? David was running for his life. Okay, he had 400 men with him. Discontented, distressed, in debt. Not really a power sort of leadership team, really. Those 400 men are with him in the cave. That's who he's got. They become his fighting force, his power base. Perhaps not who you'd perhaps choose. They were outcasts, but they were with him, and they were going to fight with him. Moab was a good place, actually, to leave his parents. His grandmother had been a Moabitess before that, and also the king of Moab had been warring against Saul. So actually, that was quite a good place to go, because David and Saul were not the best of friends, were they? So he knew it would be a safe place to go. I thought this was interesting as I read this. Many of my peers at the moment are going through stuff with their parents, and it's the age that I've reached, really, and they might be going through cancer or Alzheimer's or heart bypass. And with your parents, actually, you just want them to be safe. You can't sort it all out, but you want them to be safe. I thought it was interesting that David chose for his parents to go to Moab because he knew they were going to be safe there. Sometimes you pick little things up as you're reading his word. David had Gad with him. He was the prophet. And he was the guy who helped David with his musical instruments. He later wrote a history of David's reign. He also confronted David over his sin. Do you remember when David started counting how many people with him? Never a good plan, is it? You know, who's with me? Otherwise, I'm not going to go forward. He started counting the Israelites, and the prophet said to him, "Don't do that. That's sin." That's a challenge, isn't it? Who needs a prophet when you're in a cave? When you're in a cave situation, because you will be in one sometime in your life, okay, you've only got to live long enough, actually, to end up being in a cave, let me tell you. It's encouraging for you, isn't it? Do you want the prophet in the cave? Sometimes, no, actually. Good friends of mine, Pete and Sue, who some of you know, are going through really tough situations on lots of fronts at the moment, which I won't go into. But do you know what? They've been looking at the prophetic that led them to go to Hill Green. Okay, God, what did you say? We need prophets in the cave, even if we don't want them. Prayer and praise, two ways to get you out of your cave situation. Now, that's very simplistic. And I want to just share a couple of things in my own life, in my own cave situations, where actually I've needed more than prayer and praise. Back in, I don't know, about 1994, we were leading a church, and actually we became burnt out. Nick was doing a high-flying finance job. I had three kids. It just all became a bit too much. I ended up, there was lots of good about Stratford that I love, but I was struggling. I ended up having to go on antidepressants for about 6 months or a year. And another occasion in my life, during when Nick was ill, I also had a time when actually I just couldn't cope anymore. So prayer and praise were part of it, but I was ill actually, and that's what I had to do. Now, I'm neither proud or ashamed of that. I felt like God wanted me to say today, mental health is not something that is just for people who don't believe. It is real in our church. I'm sure, looking out, now I don't know all of your lives, but I know that there'll be stuff. Depression and anxiety are real, and they can affect Christians as well. I know there was a mental health here, Dad. I didn't make it to it, but you know, just sort of trying to speak into some of those situations, and it's real. While preparing this, I came across a guy called Andrew Stockline, who some of you might have read about. He's a pastor in America. Recently, actually, he preached a sermon called In the Back of the Cave. If you look him up online, it's an interesting story. I mean, actually, he ends up very sadly, it broke my heart looking at it, he took his own life after preaching on In the Back of the Cave. That's challenging. He's a young pastor. He's leading a very successful church, but that's what happened. So mental health is very real. You've only got to read Brian Johnson's book, who's wrote those beautiful songs in Bethel, to see the struggles that he's gone through. Just a bit of an aside, I can't, you know, cover mental health in one short sermon, but I do want to just say it's not something to be ashamed of, it's real. Yeah. Psalm 57, okay, we're going to get to that. Just want to read it to you. It's a great psalm. Do I need, I do, okay. For the director of music to the tune of Do Not Destroy. I just love this. I was imagining Dan Coates doing some sort of spoken word to or rap to Do Not Destroy. I thought you'd just love that today. If I'd have had more time, I'd have asked him to write one. Do Not Destroy. God does have a sense of humour, doesn't he? Sometimes in the Bible, I think. In the midst of Do Not Destroy and Mick Tom. He says, be merciful to me, O God, for my enemies are in hot pursuit. All day long they press their attack. I'm reading the wrong psalm. Psalm 57. Now, none of you picked that up. You should have shouted at me. Sorry. Psalm 57. Just laugh. It's okay. When he had fled from Saul into the cave, have mercy on me, my God, have mercy on me. For in you I take refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. I cry out to God Most High, to God who vindicates me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends forth his love and his faithfulness. I am in the midst of lions. I am forced to dwell among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart, O God, is steadfast. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. Awake, my soul. Awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. He cries out to God. My son wrote a song when he was going through a really tough time. He went through a broken engagement. He clung on to God. I will sing your praise, O God. What do you do when you're in the cave? I'm asking you today. Ask yourself, do you withdraw? Do you run? Do you worship? It's great worshiping in this lovely building, which I'm really grateful for. But what do you do when you're in your cave? What do you do when you're in your workplace? What do you do? Perhaps you're in your bedroom at home. I don't know. Worshipping there is more powerful, actually, sometimes than worshiping here when you're on your own. I was thinking about Acts 16, 19-25, when Paul and Silas were in the prisons, they sang their way out. You can't sing your way out of every situation. I'm not naive, but do you know what? Singing and worship really helps. It's really powerful. Practice the presence of the Lord, because do you know what? You need his presence every day. There's not going to be a day you wake up and think, oh, don't need his God today. His presence every day. Every day. When we were at Maximize, Carnarvon Pentecostal Church, I noticed one of their core values was practice the presence of God. I like that. Worship's vital. Ezra's my grandson. We went through this situation. Okay, I took him to the cinema. Grandma, grandson day. Thought it was going to be really good. Went to see Incredibles 2. Actually, I thought that'd be fine. You've seen Incredibles 1. I kid you not, halfway through, okay, Incredibles 2, Ezra sat next to me and goes, really loud voice, Grandma, get me out of here. I'm really scared. Okay, this is a great date that you're on, isn't it? The people turn around in front. I'm like, okay. I'm okay. Anyway, I make him stay till the end. You'll think I'm an awful grandma now. Because I feel like he needs to know that the Incredibles win and actually there's going to be a good outcome. And then driving home, he's talking on about it a little bit. And this is a good distraction sometimes when you're fearful. I put LZ7 on quite loud, and he does one song called When You've Got No Fear, No Fear At All, when you go through the fire and you go through the rain. So Ezra and I sang that at the top of our voices, and we talked about it. I'm not saying you can just do that with fear. You have to validate some fear is real, but actually there are choices we can make sometimes. What does David do? Verse 1, he cries out to God, have mercy on me, my God, have mercy on me, for in you I take refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings. David cries out twice. Humility is the door to worship. Past mercies can guarantee your future. Call on him today. If you can't see the sunshine of God's face, then cower down beneath the shadow of his wing. Because our calamities are a matter of time, but our soul safety is for eternity. While I was preparing this, it's interesting you mentioned CAP today. I had a CAP card come through the post from, I think it might come up in a minute, a guy called John. Never met John before. We just give a tiny amount a month, and the card came, and the whole story is that he cried out to God, something came through the door, he got in touch with CAP, he became a Christian, he's now in a really, you know, good church, he's thriving. Cry out to God, he can answer any sort of prayers like that. He can send us the help we need. And cry sometimes, okay? I'm not the best crier, I'm a bit of a bottler, so I sort of hold it in, and then eventually it comes out. Don't know whether you've seen the film The Holiday with Cameron Diaz in. Okay, some of you nod to me, okay, you know what I'm talking about. She doesn't cry very easily, okay, she keeps it in. Until actually, I thought about this yesterday, until she knows she's loved, and then she cries. You are loved by God today. Cry if you need to. Speak to myself as well. David knew his God. So he knew by crying out to him that he would fight for him. He knew he was on his side. That's got to be good. Verse 3, he sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me, and God sends forth his love and faithfulness. I'm in the midst of lions. I am forced to dwell among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. I was thinking about words. That phrase, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's absolute rubbish, isn't it? Words are really powerful. They can hurt your soul, and you can need deliverance from words that have been said to you. David knew that. He's in quite a threatening situation, isn't he? A bit like Daniel in the lion's den. Also made me think about the persecuted church. You know, they continue to worship in Lebanon, in Sudan, in Iraq. They're in really tough situations. Maybe today you're the only Christian in your job, in your family, on your uni course, I don't know, at work. Maybe it's really tough. Saul had 3,000 men, David had 400. So he was outnumbered 5-1, so you're in good company. If we want safety and security and comfort, then don't bother to follow the call of God. I say this to myself as well. I speak to myself. If you risk for his name, then it's going to be tough. Do you ever feel like your worship is thin, contrived, worldly? I do sometimes, I think, actually. But do you know what? When you're going through tough stuff, it becomes very real. I work for the church, but sometimes that can be tough as well. It's not all, you know, sweetness and light. There are stuff, it's tough, it's real. Verse 5, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. David, even in the midst of, in his cave, he said, let your glory be over all the earth. Verse 6, they spread a net for me. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. What does that look like to be bowed down in fear? My dad has just been through a triple heart bypass. I kind of held it together when I was down there in Birmingham. When I came back on the Monday, I lost the plot, really. And Nick will tell you I didn't sleep all night. I was shaking. I'm not saying this to any glory. I'm just trying to be real. Fear was very real at that point. That next morning, I threw up. You'll love that. I just reacted to the whole situation. I went for a run then. I got with God. But that fear was very real. Fear can be very real. Verse 7 to 11. I love that David says it how it is, but then he has a sort of cheerful confidence in God. My heart, O God, is steadfast. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. Awaken my soul, awake harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I love that he says my heart is fixed, steadfast, calm, fixed, firm, resolute, happy, established. Is that how your heart is today? Our hearts are funny, aren't they? Jeremiah 17, verse 9 to 10 says this, our heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind and reward each person according to their conduct, according to what they have done. That really challenges me. Do you sometimes say to people, do what's in your heart? That's a good plan. Do what's in your heart. Martin Ruddock said, don't do what's in your heart. Your heart's deceitful above all things. Get vision from heaven and do that. I thought, yeah, there's some real wisdom in that, isn't there? Need to move on. Your heart can beat really fast when you're anxious. I'm sure none of you have been anxious, but it goes really, really fast. God wants us to see last sometimes, to reflect, to wait. David chooses praise, doesn't he? We do have a power of choice sometimes in our situations. I don't want to denigrate unemployment, illness. There's some really rubbish stuff out there that's really hard. And but sometimes we do have a choice. I don't want stuff to make me not choose how I live my life. How we sow, how we build, how we forgive, how we're grateful. We can do some of those things. Whilst I was preparing for this, that was when I got the phone call from Mum to say, Dad's going in for his triple heart bypass. So straight away, I felt like God say, so what are you going to do now, Sue? You're in the cave. How are you going to approach this? Actually, I walked back into the lounge and I got YouTube on and Darlene Check was singing. I kid you not. This is how I fight my battles. You think that I'm surrounded? Well, I'm surrounded by you. Now, I've not got it right over the last few weeks all the time because I'm human, but I've tried to choose. Awake, bring your best. Do this even when you're feeling down, particularly when you're feeling down, actually. Nick is a good example. He often worships first thing in the morning. I probably am more likely to read my Bible, but he often puts his app on his phone and worships. He's been through some stuff. Do you greet the daybreak with your songs of light? Do you? Is that what you do when you get up in the morning? Just ask him. Verse 9 says, I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. It's almost a vow from David, isn't it? To speak truth anyway. Verse 10, for great is your love reaching the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Okay, here are some tips now, my last bit really, on practical devotionals. So what do we do in this day and age when we're in the cave? Okay, this century now, like David was in the cave, how do you live your life? How do you do that? I think when you're in a cave, it's messy, it's dirty. Marion White always used to say, what you do in your devotional life will be, in the end, what you do with your life. That's pretty powerful, actually. What you hear from him will be what you do. When we had a chance to go on sabbatical a few years ago, we went to Beth, we went to Audacious, we went to all sorts of churches across Manchester, and they were all speaking on the same thing. Not really a surprise, is it? Because the Holy Spirit's like that. On prayer and praise. There was a huge key on one stage. And basically what they were saying was, prayer and praise will get you out of most situations. when we came back from Bethel, Nick painted a room, and we've got a prayer room in our house. And there's a picture, I think, that might come up in a minute. And the idea is that you go in there and you enter his rest from whatever's going on and you pray. I'd like to say I go in there more often than I really do, but I do go in there. I've cried in there, I've lay on the floor, I've tried to say to God all sorts of stuff. And the presence of God is in that room, I think, because I've dug a well there. Where do you need to go? John Wesley's mum, Susanna, she had 10 children. She used to put her apron over her head, and her kids knew then she was getting with God. Nothing was going to stop her. This is what she was doing. You might not have an apron today, but there's somewhere you can go and find to pray. There's somehow you can do that. You know your life. I don't. David knew his God. Do you? Because if you do, you'll get with him. I think you'd all agree that Mel McKellar is, who's walking through cancer at the moment, she's at Hill Green today with us, and she shows that surrender that's really admirable as she's walking through it. How we approach things, she said to me the other day when I was out walking with her, I only want to talk about God. Gratitude and thankfulness when you're in the cave are powerful as well. A text she sent me when she'd seen her oncologist. I really appreciate his approach, Sue. She's going through cancer. She can appreciate her oncologist's approach. What an attitude is that of surrender? Worship. I think there are three quick points to devotionals. Worship, Bible study and prayer. So a quick bit about worship. My great track at the moment on the Undoing album by Steffi Greit singer is called Out of Hiding. It's when she's out of a cave, actually. Mike Beaumont, who was a pastor here many years ago, great teacher. He, teacher of the word, but he said to me once, 15 minutes prayer, 15 minutes Bible study, 15 minutes worship, Sue. But if you can do nothing, 15 minutes of worship will awaken your soul and do more for you than anything else, will help you. And he's a teacher. I've mentioned Darlene. One of Chris Greenhalgh's lines in one of Chris Greenhalgh's songs is, sing your praise when the lies invade. You know when in your head it all starts kicking off, what are you going to do? Are you going to sing? Are you going to speak truth? I know when Meg Dean was leading worship recently, I don't know all their house situation, but you were going through something, and she read out... Oh, Meg Latham, sorry. Okay, that as well, her over here. She was going through some house situation, and she just kept speaking out, Psalm 91, I think it was. Very powerful to speak out. Our mouths, our ears are really powerful in these sort of situations. It's not the rock-lined pit for which the dusty traveller longs for, but the sweet, cool water that flows from it. It's not intellectual knowledge about God that quenches man's thirsty heart, but the very presence and person of him, of God himself. That's who you need. I've talked quite a bit about prayer. Worship, prayer. Because a good friend of mine, Julie Corney, once said to me, do you not pray at all times, Sue? I just used to move my quiet time, tick it off, spend the rest of my day. It was many years ago. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 17 says, pray at all times. Nikki Gumbel advises new Christians, any of you on Alpha, 5 to 7 minutes a day of praying is what he advises. William Carey says, the secret is prayer, fervent, believing prayer. It lies at the heart of personal godliness. John Wesley says, God does nothing but in answer to prayer. Come to the Greater Manchester Prayer Gathering that's going on Thursday, November 22nd. All churches across Manchester are praying for your city. If you've not been, come. All denominations gathering together to pray for Manchester, our city. Because it's not just about our church, it's about all the churches in Manchester. Bible study, finally. I'm not saying this to say how good I am, because I'm not, but these are some of the things that I've used to try and read the Bible and keep it fresh. Word for the day, she reads truth, Bible in a year, Old Testament, New Testament. I'm going through Timothy Keller at the moment, The Ways of Wisdom, a year of daily devotions through the book of Proverbs. It is a challenge. Proverbs are challenging. They hit you to the core. At first I thought, I can't stand this. This is doing me in. But I've pressed on with it. I had a slight argument, discourse with someone in Hill Green. I know you can't believe it, but I did one Sunday. And anyway, the very next Sunday, okay, The very next day, if you're reading systematically, God will speak to you, let me tell you. July 30th, don't love an argument. Okay? He can speak to you at any time, whatever you are doing. Jesus Calling, Jesus Always, Jesus Today is another devotional by Sarah Young. It's kind of experiential, but it's good also. Do whatever you've got to do. If you've got children today, Jesus, the Storybook Bible. Sarah Hagen recommended it, kids pastor. It is brilliant. It weaves Jesus into every book through the Bible. It's amazing. Psalms for Young Children. If you have children today, there's a beautiful book called Psalms for Young Children by Marie Ellen Dalvell. I saw it on Naomi's shelf. I bought it. I bought it for Ezra. She's buying it for all her, my daughter's buying it for all kids who are getting dedicated. You can't start too young with your kids. You've got to start early. Read good books. Chick Yule, he's written two good books, hasn't he, at the moment? He's probably written more than that, I don't know. The Man Who Broke Into St. Peter's, I haven't read yet, but I've read Rooks at Dusk. Go to conferences. These are other things you can do. Just go and have a go. See what God's doing wider, because that will help your perspective. Richard Foster says, occasional joggers do not suddenly enter an Olympic marathon. They prepare and train themselves over a period of time, and so should we. When such a progression is followed, we can expect to pray with greater authority and spiritual success a year from now than at present. And then finally, I felt God just remind me, out of Andy's word last week, that sometimes we just need people with skin on. I think Steve Thomas might have said it many years ago. You need to do all of that, but sometimes you just need people. You need a hug. You need someone to text. You need to go for a walk. You need to have cake. I don't know, whatever you do, you need to go for a run. Need to have cake, but you need people as well. David and Jonathan built a great friendship together. You need both. Thank you. Thanks for listening.